Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com. On behalf of our family of hosts, staff, and the millions of listeners who have tuned in since 2009, we want to wish you happy holidays and ask for your support as we launch our daily in-house news coverage. Please consider making us a part of your end-of-year giving in 2013. Your membership donation is tax deductible and the best way to show you believe in our work and the importance of a free, food-focused media resource. Consider donating today at heritageradionetwork.org by clicking the donate button. Thanks for your support and enjoy the show.
Ooh, I like the way you do. So slow, and I've been so satisfied. No, I ain't never, 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 never had no loving like this before.
Hey, hey, it's Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network, and I'm your host, Kathy Irway, and welcome to our last live broadcast of 2014. It is officially the holiday season, so we're talking about what happened in 2013. This show is all about books these days. It's all about food literature, cookbooks, practical botany tips, gardening, and also food politics. So we wanted to wrap up and, the year in books about food. We have some favorites, and we also have a guest joining me today to discuss some of those. Her name is Lana McCarthy, and she is the founder of Anarchy in a Jar, Artisanal Jams, and also the author of Jam On, The Craft of Canning Fruit. Thanks
Hi,
for joining.
Everyone.
So your book came out in 2012.
2012, yeah.
So it doesn't make the cut.
It doesn't make the cut.
Otherwise, we'd be talking about our books.
yeah.
So, we all know the bestseller list, and we see what's on display at bookstores. But let's start off with some books that we may have not heard of, or I may have, or, vice versa. So, Lena, what do you have that
less common? Have a secret life as kind of a book nerd. I used to be, previous to being a jam maker, I was a librarian.
Oh, that's so right.
It's part of my...
You're a little bookish.
Yeah, I'm a little bookish. But, and I also tend to kind of like quirkier books, too, in general.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, especially in terms of in cooking and cooking literature, I think I tend to be drawn to ones that are a little more... I don't know, a little weirder.
Voice-driven, maybe?
Definitely. I mean, I also obviously appreciate really beautiful, interestingly well-written books. But one I really liked this year was The Drunken Botanist by Amy Stewart, I think is her name. Amy Stewart, yeah. And it just was a really fun book. It was, it's all about the history of botanicals and plants that go into classic alcohols. So it's
cocktails or... Just
it's
the alcohol.
It's both, but it's mostly it's talking weird, quirky stories about rye, or the history of sake and how it began with, a grain of rice and its weird history. And obviously it makes sense that alcohol is kind of the base of, has a weird history. It's always been a little bit naughty, I think, and always a little bit... quirky in its history, and often it was, accidents that helped people discover how to make some delicious fermented drink. Because it's fermentation, it was a really fun read, and kind of, obviously, so much of it was things I didn't know, the history of rye being something really quirky.
Yeah,
and
now that you think about it, everything alcoholic is... is plant-based.
Exactly.
Totally plant-based from the grains and also to a lot of the mixers.
Totally.
Like bitters and so forth. It's just herbs and stuff.
Yeah, so. And they were talking about, in the book, they have the history of Angostura bitters, which is like a really disputed, it's like a 30-year battle, may or may not be the basis of Angostura bark. It's really, there's a lot of fun stories in there.
Somebody just walked into the door. We've got another guest on, so she's getting settled in here, another expert to talk about food books, but that's an interesting one, and I haven't heard of The Drunken Botanist.
Yeah.
And I think it's a perfect time because everyone's, you know, having fun with their home bars and trying to get into mixology. So
exactly. It's a perfect book to read when you want to, like, when you're bored, it's winter, and you're wanting to think about green things that turn into alcohol.
So we've got Wenjie Ying. She is the founder of Local Roots NYC, and which is a CSA that anyone can join, wink, wink, and get some of the best local produce and meats and dairy. Wenjie, thanks for joining.
Hey, sorry I'm late.
That's okay. It's actually, there's a huge rainstorm outside, so I was afraid you got swept away.
I almost did.
Yeah.
There was a huge truck parking for 20 minutes in front of me.
Yeah. So glad you made it. Do you have an unusual or maybe less known, not a bestseller, favorite food book or piece of food literature of the year?
No, but I have been more interested in the magazines this year.
Ah, food zines.
Yeah. I think mostly because we're starting a local roots zine. Oh. So we're trying to find inspiration. I think two favorites, actually three of them right now, are Cherry Bomb.
Cherry Bomb, that's right. It was founded by the wife of some restaurateur, right?
Yeah, the guy that owns like Smith Canteen and all those on Smith Street. She also works a lot with, I think, like edible schoolyards and stuff like that.
So Cherry Bomb is a feminist take on food?
Yeah, it's great.
Oh, nice.
It's all about strong women involved in food, and it's very creative-based and... all the contributors are women.
That's exciting. It's a new kind of niche.
Yeah.
For
magazine.
I brought one here if you guys want to
see. Oh, nice.
It looks gorgeous. Sweet. Yeah, this year was we saw a lot of new food magazines. Mm-hmm. What are some of your other favorites?
Have you guys seen Gather Journal?
Yeah, that's a pretty one.
Yeah, that one's great.
Really beautiful. And I'm going to switch over here.
get situated. No worries. What about Modern Farmer?
That's pretty, too.
That was an exciting launch, talking about agricultural, just every topic concerning agriculture and the food system, Modern Farmer.
Yeah.
I actually love Gather Journal because it feels like they could be your friend. I mean, they have, like, mixtapes out for each issue. The recipes they have in their journal and also on their website are inspired by movies. Which I think is really neat.
That's really
I didn't know that. That's cool.
Yeah.
So they have a cocktail recipe based on like the Royal Tenenbaums or a lot of Wes Anderson.
That sounds like something we would do.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, oh, these guys are my friends. That's great.
That's awesome.
Cool. All right. So yeah, it's anything else? You said three magazines. Did you?
Yes. I have a bad memory, so I had to write these things down.
No worries.
Behind the scenes?
Oh.
It's called Kinfolk.
Oh, Kinfolk.
Yeah, you guys seen it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So as you can tell, they're all these magazines have a very similar aesthetic.
And they're very visual.
Very visual.
Yeah.
The photography.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And they're quarterlies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mostly.
And I think Kinfolk is good because they have a whole city guide. So, you know, they'll do reviews on a coffee shop in Portland or talk about a restaurant in Toronto. So if you're going to a city and you want to see something that you will guarantee, like, it's probably, you know, something related to a Brooklyn owner also, you can check out their website or magazine.
Very cool. So many magazines to choose from.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a good idea for like a subscription or like a gift or something. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good
for your foodie friend. So I have a pick that, I actually had this author on the show over the summer, but You know, I haven't, you know, I just thought it was a really smart book, but I haven't heard too much about it, so I'll bring it up. It's called Raising Dough, The Complete Guide to Financing a Socially Responsible Food Business. And just the fact that this book exists, I think, is very telling of, like, a new new trend and a new movement, really, in a small, locally, ever socially responsible food businesses, which you guys know a lot about as business owners, you know, at startups or whatever you want to call it. I mean, this book is practical, but it's also, it kind of looks at the big picture and what it means for, like, the larger scheme of producing food mm-hmm. and growing it and so forth and business. Mm-hmm. So,
so what are some things that you've taken away from that book so far?
I'm a little rusty because I had her on the show, and she is also so she comes from it from a nonprofit background. Like, she's been fundraising for many different socially responsible organizations, and it just occurred, you know, to her and as well as a lot of other experts in this kind of field of nonprofit that food really connects a lot of people, and it really ties into a lot of the goals that they're trying to do. So if we focus on food, and since we are seeing a lot of people doing that, starting up new businesses, small businesses, in, you know, all sorts of food niches, then that's something that we should encourage. So this book is all about really just hands-on, like, how to do it well.
Lena, what do you think? Because you've had your business, what, for 5 years now?
Almost five, yeah.
What do you think has been, I think, the biggest challenge?
I think that the biggest challenge is actually, well, I don't, there's there's a lot of challenges, but I think managing growth is the hardest thing, mm-hmm. while also maintaining a certain level of
integrity
and like independence as well.
Gosh, yeah.
And I think it's really interesting to see how businesses go beyond that 5-year point too. I think a lot of small businesses fold or transform as they grow. I think transforming is natural, but I think the way to sustain it is to really find that niche where you're able to have a viable business that's also smart and like mm-hmm. and feasible, so, and has a longevity, which is about sustainability and having a real I think having roots that go beyond a fad or beyond something
right.
that's just gonna.
So if you have something that's sort of indispensable that nobody else really does like you
exactly.
do, then
yeah.
that's yeah, then you can.
But maintaining that is difficult, and actually transforming that as people's needs change, how does your business change with people's needs? And
right.
that's, I think, it's like that's how you succeed, but also it's like how you fail or how you struggle is doing that and kind of keeping on your game. And I mean, it's interesting because I totally am going to read that book and
yeah.
look at it because I'm curious what she'll say.
I mean, I see a lot of questions with
raising dough. It's like, I want dough.
I know. And it's tough.
Where is this dough?
It's tough because I see a lot of like kind of people looking at this new kind of food movement, artisanal food movement, as an elite thing because it's people, you know, it's mm-hmm. can be harder to afford. And, you know, for all these reasons that the system is not maybe set up for small business as well as, you know, mm-hmm. something that is just a lot more robust and has millions of investors and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's really tough to conquer that
mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a huge concern, at least I hear.
Yeah, and I think one of the things about having a new business, especially one that's somewhat unique, and certainly something at least I feel is often this lack of mentorship. Like, I wish, I'm always looking for mentors or people to help me who are like older and wise.
Yeah, everyone's
figuring it out. And I obviously there's many wonderful wise people who've done businesses before, but there is something unique about food businesses in like 2013 where it's a different market. It's a different world. It's like you're the classic model of how you would start a business, of how, how you'd raise money, right, how you would grow. All of those rules are not necessarily rules anymore. Like, and I think that's what a lot of us are doing is changing those models. Exactly. Kickstarter, or like, you know, there's plenty of other ways to like raise revenue and to maintain a certain level of autonomy as well in your own business while raising revenue. And that means that's like kind of a game changer in terms of being a business owner. So
it's also a whole generation of people that don't know anything about running a business that are running businesses.
And we hear that all the time. Somebody was a career changer. Mm-hmm. They used to be a teacher, and all of a sudden they decide to make donuts for a living. You know, like that's just the classic example of the new kind of food entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
So lots of food for thought in raising dough. It seems to, you know, resemble a lot of what we see going on in our life, especially here at Heritage, so in Brooklyn.
Yeah, and you know, on that note, to veer it back to cookbooks too, because I know I'm sure Wendy and I could talk about business ownership for a long time,
which we do for a long time at bars. While we're spending the dough, we don't have
exactly spending the dough and raising dough. I think that, I mean, in terms of cookbooks, I always find books like Raising Dough or, like they said, like The Drunken Botanist or books that are like that to be a little bit more interesting to me and like my library of collections of stuff than the standard. I think a lot, there's so many cookbooks out nowadays. There's so many. It's crazy. It's like I feel like every day I talk to someone who has a new cookbook, which is really cool.
There are a lot of
cookbooks. But it's also crazy. It's like, how can you read that many? Or,
well, that's what we're trying to do on the show, or at least, you know, pick through them and get to know the folks behind them a little bit better.
Yeah, and I guess my point being that I think a lot of the publicized books, like the ones that you see touted, are not always the most interesting.
I think that's why I'm so connected to these really visual magazines, is that you can connect with this image more.
It's more casual.
And that brings you into it, yeah.
Yeah.
I love that Gather Journal actually, they divide everything by, you know, like appetizers, main dish, dessert.
It's formulaic.
Yeah.
Something to look forward to each year or each issue that's in each one. Cool. Let's talk a little bit more about cookbooks and other favorite books right after a quick little commercial and musical interlude.
I ain't looking for no trouble tonight.
You are listening to Let It Go by the California Honey Drops on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I ain't looking for no fight. Just let it go.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Did you know that pollinators are needed for more than 2/3 of the world's crop species? Most of these pollinators are bees. However, North America's bee population has been steadily declining since the 1990s. Whether you live in the country or the city, you can show your commitment by hosting a hive in your backyard or even on a rooftop. The beekeeping movement is growing, so you're sure to find swarms of folks who can help you find your way. Learn more about the ways you can help be the solution at wholefoodsmarket.com/sharethebuzz.
Let's talk it over. It was just this morning.
All right, we're chatting about our favorite food books of the year, 2013 that is, with Wen Jie Ying of Local Roots NYC, Lana McCarthy, and Anarchy on Jar. So we just went over some of the sort of lesser known books. But this year, I know Lana and I read this. I don't know if Wen Jie did.
I've been listening to...
I'm holding it. Okay.
I was actually just listening to his talk at Google about that book on the way here.
Okay, so that would be a major scribe in food literature, and it's Michael Pollan. He came out with a huge book called Cooked, the natural History of Transformation. So obviously a major book, big bestseller, very long, and very anticipated. What'd you think, Lena?
I liked it. I actually did. I read and listened to it, which is so interesting.
Audiobook.
Like, audiobooks are, I'm a really visual person. So listen, listening to something is I like it, but it's weird for me. Though I actually loved, I really liked his audiobook because he has this kind of amazing voice. It's
yeah,
very
like
comforting.
The whole book.
And he really, it sounds like he's just a comforting book, a comforting voice that really was like and lulls you into his discussions. I mean, I think it was interesting.
Natural storyteller.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think because the book is inspired by like nostalgia almost, you know, of cooking with your family or the reasons why we even started to cook, which is makes sense that he has an enticing.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Voice. Now, I liked it a lot. I thought it was very entertaining. And for those who haven't read it, it sort of dissects cooking through four natural essential elements of cooking, which are fire, water, air, and earth. And then kind of talks about, like, so for the fire chapter, he goes down to Texas and smokes brisket with the pit masters there. And then for water, he has this chef who teaches him all these, I don't know, essentials of, like, you know, kind of rustic peasant cooking and so forth. But interesting criticism I heard recently, I can't remember, you know, where exactly, but I think I've heard this a few times, similar to what we've been hearing criticized with Malcolm Gladwell's works, is that it's kind of like pop culture, you know, investigating a topic from a lot of, you know, voices that he interviews, and they're sort of selected, you know, albeit, you know, in all earnestness, like a journalist would get that voice of the people, but in a sort of maybe random way.
Mm.
And they're just taking these few examples to prove a greater point, which is maybe not, I don't know, solid enough. But I don't know if that, you know, in Cooked, Michael Pollan is trying to come to a great thesis, but rather than, like, you know, explore these different facets of cooking. But it did seem to me like, well, I wonder why he picked that pit master. You know, what would the outcome be like if he went with the other pit, like another barbecue guy and so forth?
Yeah, and I think, I mean, sometimes, at least this book I felt was a little, some parts it seemed a little bit shallow, but like, oh yeah, we get that.
Fluffy.
You know, we get that barbecue exists, and I know for people who have existed, it seemed like a little bit, part especially, a little, I don't know, out of date or a little bit like,
because we've been hearing
obvious.
About barbecue glory for a long time.
Yeah.
It's getting a little old for us.
Yeah, the way he was talking about barbecue kind of in the way as though like, ooh, this new thing, barbecue. It's like, there's like how many barbecue restaurants
or
in New York right now? There's like
that,
800.
Yes, it's very, very trendy. And
very
yeah.
trendy.
But do you feel like that's because he's trying to focus on a different audience than his other books?
Maybe.
Like it's more general. It's more about the general question of how to cook. It's not the science behind something.
You know, you're really right.
That was a crowd-pleasing topic.
I mean, a lot of people who might not necessarily want to read about food politics and how we're ruining the environment, like in his other books, would maybe want to pick up Cook. You know what I mean? He wouldn't
pick up Cooked.
Yeah. You know, so they would be entertained by Cook, but then, you know, with his other works, it would be harder to swallow.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Maybe
there
is like a compromise
true.
There.
And that said, I actually did find it like, I mean, it inspired me to make brisket. I was reading about fire, and that's something that I don't usually cook.
Or what
meat
if, like,
or
you know, for the cook
meat,
section, so. He talks about these yakitori chefs or somebody. Yeah, you know, I'm looking at this Louisa Shafia book, and you know, grilling on a shish kebab in an outdoor. I don't know. There's so many ways to go with fire,
mm-hmm.
but like, yeah, the barbecue thing really appeals to a lot of mainstream.
For sure.
American readers.
Yeah. I mean, I think I actually wish that...
I wonder
that
if it was a conscious thing.
I wish that he'd gone a little more into some of the food politics. I felt like it was a little... That's what I mean about fluffy. It felt a little fluffy, parts of
it. Was an easy read.
It was easy, yeah.
Yeah. But overall, though, the mission of the book was to glorify cooking, I guess.
For sure. For sure.
Which is nice. It is a lighthearted topic.
In this Google Talk, which you can find on YouTube, he talks about what inspired him to write the book. And he's saying that it's interesting how less people are cooking, but more people are watching cooking on TV.
Yes. I saw a New York Times article he wrote to that effect.
Which is so strange, yeah.
And, yeah.
I actually have one defense of the book as well. I read this, there was, I think maybe it was in the New York Times review of the of Cooked that criticized the fact that they felt like the all of the cooking that he was focusing on was very difficult and time-consuming and would not be feasible for the common home cook.
I didn't,
which I actually disagree with. I think that's not true at all. I feel like he is, I mean, he's not, he is, sure, building a barbecue, a smoker, maybe in the way that he's describing is maybe involved, but it's not actually that involved. And, you know, smoking meat is like not rocket science, nor is the braising or cooking that he's talking about. I actually disagree with that.
That's
argument
a really
that it was
interesting.
They
argument.
Were saying that it was like elitist and only aimed at a certain audience that would that it wasn't possible for it to actually recreate the recipe.
I can see that point with regards to having the time to cook.
Sure.
Because a lot of people say that that's the major factor, that they're working, they don't have time to cook. So, you know, that's tough. You know, it's a really tough argument.
But I think that's part of the book, right, is to talk about why aren't we spending an extra half an hour to cook something that's going into our bodies and feeding our souls and
really true,
bringing
yeah.
our family
mm-hmm.
together.
Yeah. Instead of, like, watching your favorite show right. or something, or a million shows.
Which you
yeah.
can do while you're cooking.
Yes,
yeah.
you can.
That's what I do
yeah.
sometimes.
No, it was, that's an interesting argument.
It was, it was. And I mean, I think that,
And maybe it's going to say, you know, that we don't cook a lot, so it seems really harder than it is.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yeah. All right, so, Cooked. Okay. I see you brought another book, Wenjie.
Have you guys read Eat the City?
We love Robin Schulman's mm-hmm. Eat the City. Had her on the show. Lovely, lovely lady. Why'd you pick it?
I went to a lecture that she had at, a bookstore, and it's just the history of food in New York.
Yes.
And it's a really great way that ties in both those factors. She talks about how community gardens got started in New York City, how we were the main, Brooklyn was one of the main producers of sugar in the midst.
That was fascinating.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
yeah. And
so
then
I
how people are, you know, making everything from honey to, you know, sugar, growing sugar cane
mm-hmm.
these days in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that was that's a really great book. I'm glad you brought it up.
And I thought it was really inspiring, especially because we were talking about, you know, having your own food business and not really, you know, you're starting business not to make this money. You're inspired by your food. You're inspired by your community, which I think is definitely telling in the book. She talks about trying to transform the city into something better by taking back our land with food.
Right. Absolutely. In an unlikely land for food, you would think, which mm-hmm. is New York City, which is what you guys are doing. Congratulations. Thank you so much for showing it can be done. Elena, any last minute, last picks? Cookbooks?
I feel like I had my list.
Okay. That's fine.
I can't remember.
Okay. So, I wanted to bring up a book that is, it was given to me actually by Robert Sietsam on my birthday. And it is called The Old World Kitchen, The Rich Tradition of European Peasant Cooking. This book is really heavy, and it's full of recipes. Just tons of recipes for, you know, there's a recipe just called One Pot Stew. But it also has a lot of basics, like sauerkraut, bakla, which is salt cod, and how to make yogurt, and just, you know, simple food, simple rustic food that isn't really embellished or dressed up for, you know, a pretty photo or pretty restaurant plate. And today I thought that was refreshing because not only are people trying to do, you know, DIY experiments and ferment their own, you name it, vinegars, yogurts, booze, but also, you know, there's so many restaurant cookbooks out there, and it seems, you know, this is a fun little contrast. You know, this is where the basics are.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my pick.
So
like
which
it.
Of those recipes in there do you feel like you use the most in your cooking?
Well, I just got it. But I think I you know, puree of salt cod, so delicious, trout and sour cream. I'm really excited about the smoked fish and other sorts of like gravlax and curing of fish, and also there's someone for meat like charcuterie too. So I'm really excited to get like down and dirty and like kind of experiment around with these kind of long-term projects. We'll see how that turns out. Wendy, any last minute picks from you?
I usually get recipes from blogs, so
it's good blogs. You know, a good year in blogs. That is, I think that there's more and more written word, you know, online than the book, than the cookbooks. And you know, as much as we're talking about how many cookbooks come out each year, I can't. Nobody can really put like a number on how many blogs are started each year.
Though I think it's also interesting for certain things, like just what you're talking about, things like, how do I make gravlax, or how do I do this basic thing? I actually find that the internet is kind of, can be really overwhelming and misleading. If you want like really basic information on how do I do this one thing, like a really specific thing.
Like how do
thing,
I make like fondant?
How do I make fondant? Which we actually did find in the internet, so maybe that's not a good argument.
No, but there was a lot of recipes to choose from. I was like, which one works? I don't know.
And
there was
like difference. Like fermentation is one of those things, you know, and you want to really know exactly how to like ferment beets.
You want to know who to trust.
Yeah, and it's really that level of trust is where I feel like that's like the big difference between like the internets and the and a printed cookbook. Not that cookbooks are necessarily that more
tested.
Trustworthy, but they are in theory more tested.
I mean, yeah, in theory they should go through some other eyes before it's printed.
I'll see stuff online sometimes that's like, for real? Even if it's a trusted blog, sometimes I think they'll like, certain people will repost without testing or kind of just throw up a thing and you're like, that is not, those pickles not gonna work for you, like those aren't gonna work, you know. And you see that, and I think that's like, that's one of the beauties about like, or about looking to like Gather Journal or looking to a cookbook is that in theory someone's worked out that recipe and
it's
like
in
done
print,
research.
You can't just go ahead and edit and change and delete something in the back end.
So do you feel like that is what's really keep like the backbone of printed recipe books right now as compared to, you know, everyone has a blog,
the sort of like authority?
I don't know.
I think that there's a beauty component, like you said, with the zines and you know, all the great photography that we see in most cookbooks. It's that's a huge factor too.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think most people probably, I don't know, I would say most people buy cookbooks for the story and the pretty pictures.
And something, you know, to hold and curl up with on the subway.
Yeah, so. And it's pretty, and you get a nice story, and you learn about something that you didn't learn about, or, I don't know, that you didn't know before, or you get to look at kind of, you know, if it's, especially if it's like a restaurant's cookbook.
And best of all, you can actually hand it over to your friend and give it to other people, which is what
I like to
do right now. Actually, I'd like to purge my bookshelf and give them all away, so that'll be fun. So, thank you so much, guys, for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Kathy.
And let's look forward to a year in great books, 2014.
2014, so
we'll
many
see
things.
You next year, I guess, on Eat Your Words. Thanks to everyone at Heritage. Happy holidays. Don't forget to gift a donation to the station if you like what you're listening to. Have a good year.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Listeners, we want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awali, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.